Okay, to the Bible story this morning. This is a story that Jesus tells us. And in the story, we see a contrast between an extremely rich man and an extremely poor man. And we especially notice this contrast because the poor man is squatting just right outside the rich man's gate. The rich man, we're told, wears purple robes, which is a sign of power and even royalty. And the story that Jesus tells us is that the rich man even luxuriated in his fine linen underwear, which was something the average person in those days could not afford. The poor man, meanwhile, is arrayed primarily in ulcerated sores that cover his body. The rich man gorges on sweets and fats. He banquets every day. He has so much food that it simply falls off the table forgotten. The poor man, meanwhile, only can daydream that he might have just some of the garbage left over from the rich man's table. The rich man is inside the gate. The poor man is outside the gate. Jesus tells us the rich man is having a merry time. It's the same word in Greek for the prodigal son who's off, you know, in a faraway land having a merry time. You would think that the rich man, with all of his resources, would want to help the poor man, but it apparently is not so. The only mercy shown to the poor man is coming from the neighborhood dogs. They come to lick his sores, hoping to bring relief to his body. Some folks in those days thought that dog saliva had medicinal qualities. Plus, you know, a licking dog is a friendly dog. Dogs can display remarkable compassion and understanding toward the humans that they trust. If a dog trusts you, it may likely lick you. And dogs do not care whether you are rich or whether you are poor. A dog senses your spirit, not your status. And so in this story, the dogs stand in stark contrast to the rich man who stays hidden on the other side of the gate. It was the dogs who came to befriend the poor man to tend to his sores. And thus ends Act 1 of Jesus' story. It's a story that is not unfamiliar to us, a story of haves and have-nots separated by a gate. True, it's a story of extremes. We don't usually experience, at least in the United States, such extremes of wealth in contrast to poverty. But we know the story nonetheless. End of Act 1. Act 2 begins. Act 2 is rather simple. Everybody dies. The rich man dies, and the poor man dies. The angels alone are left to carry the poor man into the next world. And so they do. They carry him off and place him in the bosom of Abraham, where he finds comfort after his years and years of suffering. The rich man is buried, and as Jesus tells us, the rich man ends up in Hades. Now, with all apologies to the choir with the interpretation of your anthem, there's a difference between Hades and hell. And in the story that Jesus tells, the rich man goes to Hades. Hades, originally, is a Greek god, the god of the dead, the god of the underworld. And so in Greek mythology, Hades also then became known as the place of the dead. Everybody went to Hades after they died. And in Greek mythology, which was familiar to the people of the New Testament, when you went to Hades, Hades had different departments. You could go to the section of Hades where, if you had had a lot of problems in this life, you would be comforted. Or you could go to the section of Hades where, if you were the one who caused problems, you would go there to learn your lessons. You would go there to experience some punishment, a little bit of justice. And so it was that Hades had different sections. And it turns out in this story of Jesus that you could see one another from section to section in Hades. And so here's the rich man, and he's in the part of Hades where he's there to learn his lessons. He's there to see something that he was blind during his life, unable to see. He was unable to see his connection with this poor man. He was unable to see that his wealth was not just because he was a superior human being. His wealth was in all likelihood a little bit of luck, a little bit of God's mercy, and perhaps a lot of exploitation. He was there to learn his lesson. He was there to learn that God put people on this earth to help each other, to look at each other, to pay attention to each other, to strengthen one another. He was there to learn his lesson. And thus ends Act 2. Both of them are in the next world. It was Hades. It was an imaginary world. The world where things are finally at last made right. Those who suffer are comforted. And those who have been a little too comfortable receive their justice and a chance to learn what they had not known or been willing to see in this life. Thus begins Act 3 in the story that Jesus tells. Of course, in Hades, the rich man is miserable. And he tries to lobby Abraham to give him some help. He calls out to Abraham. He can see Abraham in the distance, and they're close enough they can at least talk with each other. And he calls out to Abraham in this imaginary place. And he asks Abraham to send Lazarus over to give him a little bit of water because he's tormented with thirst right now. And what's interesting, in that very comment, we get some insight that the rich man has not yet learned his lesson. He's still treating Lazarus as though Lazarus was his slave to jump at his bidding. Abraham, send Lazarus over. I need some water. And Abraham now is going to try to teach this man a lesson. He's going to see if he can't open this man's eyes to reality. And Abraham says, no, that can't happen. He says that's not going to happen because he says, we're in a situation where there's this huge chasm between us. The gate that the rich man had erected has now become a chasm, and there's no way to cross it. After a while, the walls that are built, the separations, the rules that we follow that keep us alienated from one another, in time, that becomes a chasm. And it can't be crossed. And so Abraham gently reminds the rich man that the predicament that he's in is a consequence of his refusal to share when that poor man was just right outside his gate. In fact, that gate was the start of the problem he's experiencing now. At this point, then, the man realizes that it begins to dawn on him that he missed some opportunities in this life. He missed a chance to do justice. He missed a chance to be compassionate. He missed his chance to be humane towards somebody who was in need. And so he wants Abraham then to send Lazarus again. He still can't see Lazarus as anything but his servant. Well, send Lazarus then to my brothers and warn them not to come here. At that point, he at least realizes that, in a sense, he came to that place of torment himself by his actions and his decisions and his refusals. But Abraham says, no, they already have the teachings of Moses and the prophets. The teachings of Moses and the prophets are warning enough not to live a life that will end you up in torment. That's enough. And the rich man says, no, they need to hear somebody from the dead come back to them. Well, the Bible kind of frowns on this idea that the dead give messages from God. And Abraham says, no, they have Moses and they have the prophets. If they won't listen to Moses and the prophets, if they won't listen to these teachings about righteousness and justice and being humane to people who are in need, if they don't listen to the scriptures, they won't listen to somebody from the dead either. And then Act 3 comes to a close. And like so many parables of Jesus, it just dangles there. And the only way that the parable can be finished is for you and I to finish it. You and I are Act 4 in this parable. It is up to us to figure out what happens next. It's a story. It's a story that Jesus gave so that we could think about our own lives, so that we could think about our own world where we have haves and we have have-nots. Now, I am neither as rich as the rich man nor as poor as Lazarus. The story Jesus tells has its extremes. But I do know in my own life what it means at times to feel like a have-not, and at times what it feels like to be one of the haves. I'm like a have-not when I have to deal with AT&T. I'm like a have-not when I have to when somebody else hits our car and I have to deal with two insurance companies that don't seem to agree with each other. I'm like a have-not when I have to deal with the government. When we tried to arrange for Jay to immigrate a number of years back, I felt like a have-not. The walls were there. You couldn't talk to anybody or get any answers. And the months would roll by, and she was still in China, and I was still in this country, and we couldn't get together. I felt like a have-not. I feel like a have-not when I have to talk to that guy in India who knows more about my computer than I do. I feel like a have-not when there's something wrong with me and the doctors are giving me a runaround. I can feel the wall. I can feel that it's more than a wall. It's a chasm. But I'm also one of the guys in this have versus have-not world who is a have. According to the teaching of Jesus, in God's eyes, the haves have a special responsibility. I am a have. I'm a child of God. I've been blessed by God. I may not have everything that I want, but I have so much. And when I sing that old song, "Count your many blessings, name them one by one," I could go on all day. I'm a have. I'm among those Americans who have a car and a home and a retirement account and a bank balance and stuff in my closet from Walmart. I have plenty to eat, so much so that I'm among the 70% of Americans who are too well fed. And while I am not as rich as the man in this ancient story, in this modern world, I command a powerful array of comforts and securities and pleasures, even more than he had, given what we have in our modern world. And the have-nots are always around me. The have-nots, they are the 1,000 children who live in Mattoon, who live below the poverty level. They are the several thousand elderly people who, as they have aged, have lost so much. Their hearing, their families, their friends, their position in the community, if not their health and their money. I'm one of the haves in a community where there are plenty of people who do not have good health. I'm one of the haves in a community where there are too many people who suffer because they do not have sound mental health. I'm one of the haves living in a community where there are people who are afraid in their own homes because they are abused. I am one of the haves in a community where there are too many who are unemployed or underemployed. I'm one of the haves in a community where we still have strangers who have trouble fitting in for whatever reason. I'm one of the haves. What do I do with what I have? Do I take what I have and try to put up a gate? I mean, I don't want the have-nots taking what I have. Sometimes I feel a little insecure. I don't apologize for that, because even Jesus, when he was surrounded by the have-nots, had to get away. He had to separate himself at times and go up into the mountains. He couldn't 24/7 allow the have-nots to just continually deplete him. But on the other hand, he constantly found time when he was behind the gate, so to speak, to be strengthened and renewed and replenished so that he could devote himself to his relationships with people who were the have-nots. A gate, you see, a gate can do two things. A gate can either separate us, or a gate can open so that we can relate together, so we can share each other's stories, so that we can be in relationship with each other. We must take care that the gate does not become a chasm. A gate, fine. A chasm is torment for everybody. I'm not always sure what the best way is to relate to somebody who's a have-not. I'm very aware of concepts that have emerged in recent years where we talk about toxic charity, that in helping people we can sometimes do more harm than good. I'm aware that sometimes what we give is at arm's length. That sack of groceries or that Christmas gift stands between us. And sometimes what we do simply accentuates the difference between being a have and a have not. But this story of Jesus stands for us as a beacon of light. It is a gospel story. It gets under our skin. It makes us think. It causes us to wonder what it means to be humane, to relate, to share stories, to share life. the haves and the have-nots. May we be blessed by the ways this story gets under our skin and makes us think.